Chapter 22. In the cottage, it was but 4:30 the next morning when Dinah, tired of lying awake listening to the birds, and watching the growing light through the little window in the garret roof, rose and began to dress herself very quietly, lest she should disturb Lisbeth. But already someone else was astir in the house, and had gone downstairs, preceded by Jip. The dog's pattering step was a sure sign that it was Adam who went down, but Dinah was not aware of this, and she thought it was more likely to be Seth, for he had told her how Adam had stayed up working the night before. Seth, however, had only just awakened at the sound of the opening door. The exciting influence of the previous day, heightened at last by Dinah's unexpected presence, had not been counteracted by any bodily weariness, for he had not done his ordinary amount of hard work, and so when he went to bed, it was not till he had tired himself with hours of tossing wakefulness that drowsiness came, and led on a heavier morning sleep than was usual with him. But Adam had been refreshed by his long rest, and with his habitual impatience of mere passivity, he was eager to begin the new day and subdue sadness by his strong will and strong arm. The white mist lay in the valley. It was going to be a bright warm day, and he would start to work again when he had had his breakfast. "There's nothing but what's bearable, as long as a man can work," he said to himself. "The natter o' things doesn't change, though it seems as if one's own life was nothing but change. The square o' 4 is 16, and you must lengthen your lever in proportion to your weight, is as true when a man's miserable as when he's happy. And the best o' working is, it gives you a grip hold o' things outside your own lot." As he dashed the cold water over his head and face, he felt completely himself again, and with his black eyes as keen as ever, and his thick black hair all glistening with the fresh moisture, he went into the workshop, to look out the wood for his father's coffin, intending that he and Seth should carry it with them to Jonathan Burgess, and have the coffin made by one of the workmen there, so that his mother might not see and hear the sad task going forward at home. He had just gone into the workshop, when his quick ear detected a light rapid foot on the stairs, certainly not his mother's. He had been in bed and asleep when Dinah had come in the evening, and now he wondered whose step this could be. A foolish thought came, and moved him strangely. As if it could be Hetty. She was the last person likely to be in the house. And yet he felt reluctant to go, and look and have the clear proof that it was someone else. He stood leaning on a plank he had taken hold of, listening to sounds which his imagination interpreted for him so pleasantly, that the keen strong face became suffused with a timid tenderness. The light footstep moved about the kitchen, followed by the sound of the sweeping brush, hardly making so much noise as the lightest breeze that chases the autumn leaves along the moldy path. And Adam's imagination saw a dimpled face, with dark bright eyes and roguish smiles looking backward at this brush, and a rounded figure just leaning a little to clasp the handle. A very foolish thought it could not be Hetty, but the only way of dismissing such nonsense from his head was to go and see who it was, for his fancy only got nearer and nearer to belief, while he stood there listening. He loosed the plank, and went to the kitchen door. "How do you do, Adam Bede?" said Dinah, in her calm treble, pausing from her sweeping and fixing her mild grave eyes upon him. "I trust you feel rested and strengthened again, to bear the burden and heat of the day." It was like dreaming of the sunshine and awaking in the moonlight. Adam had seen Dinah several times, but always at the Hall Farm, where he was not very vividly conscious of any woman's presence except Hetty's, and he had only in the last day or two begun to suspect that Seth was in love with her, so that his attention had not hitherto been drawn towards her for his brother's sake. But now her slim figure, her plain black gown, and her pale serene face impressed him with all the force that belongs to a reality contrasted with a preoccupying fancy. For the first moment or two he made no answer, but looked at her with the concentrated, examining glance which a man gives to an object in which he has suddenly begun to be interested. Dinah, for the first time in her life, felt a painful self-consciousness. There was something in the dark penetrating glance of this strong man so different from the mildness and timidity of his brother Seth. A faint blush came, which deepened as she wondered at it. This blush recalled Adam from his forgetfulness. I was quite taken by surprise. It was very good of you to come and see my mother in her trouble, he said, in a gentle, grateful tone, for his quick mind told him at once how she came to be there. Hope my mother was thankful to have you, he added, wondering rather anxiously what had been Dinah's reception. Yes, said Dinah, resuming her work. She seemed greatly comforted after a while, and she's had a good deal of rest in the night, by times. She was fast asleep when I left her. Who was it took the news to the Hall Farm? Said Adam, his thoughts reverting to someone there. He wondered whether she had felt anything about it. It was Mr. Irwin, the clergyman, told me, and my aunt was grieved for your mother when she heard it, and wanted me to come, and so is my uncle, I'm sure, now he's heard it, but he was gone out to Rossiter all yesterday. They'll look for you there, as soon as you've got time to go, for there's nobody around that hearth, but what's glad to see you. Dinah, with her sympathetic divination, knew quite well that Adam was longing to hear if Hetty had said anything about their trouble. She was too rigorously truthful for benevolent invention, but as he had contrived to say something in which Hetty was tacitly included. Love has a way of cheating itself consciously, like a child who plays at solitary hide and seek. It is pleased with assurances that it all the while disbelieves. Adam liked what Dinah had said, so much that his mind was directly full of the next visit he should pay to the Hall Farm, when Hetty would perhaps behave more kindly to him than as he had ever done before. But you won't be there yourself any longer? He said to Dinah. No, I go back to Snowfield on Saturday, and I shall have to set out to Treddleston early, to be in time for the Oakburn carrier. So I must go back to the farm tonight, that I may have the last day with my aunt and her children. But I can stay here all today, if your mother would like me, and her heart seemed inclined towards me last night. Ah, then, she's sure to want you today. If mother takes to people at the beginning, she's sure to get fond of them, but she's a strange way of not liking young women. Though, to be sure, Adam went on, smiling, her not liking other young women is no reason why she shouldn't like you. Hitherto Jip had been assisting at this conversation in motionless silence, seated on his haunches, and alternately looking up in his master's face to watch its expression, and observing Dinah's movements about the kitchen. The kind smile with which Adam uttered the last words was apparently decisive with Jip of the light in which the stranger was to be regarded, and as she turned round after putting aside her sweeping brush, he trotted towards her, and put up his muzzle against her hand in a friendly way. You see, Jip bids you welcome, said Adam, and he's very slow to welcome strangers. Poor dog, said Dinah, patting the rough gray coat. I've a strange feeling about the dumb things, as if they wanted to speak, and it was a trouble to them because they couldn't. I can't help being sorry for the dogs always, though perhaps there's no need. But they may well have more in them than they know how to make us understand, for we can't say half what we feel with all our words. Seth came down now, and was pleased to find Adam talking with Dinah. He wanted Adam to know how much better she was than all other women. But after a few words of greeting, Adam drew him into the workshop to consult about the coffin, and Dinah went on with her cleaning. By 6 o'clock they were all at breakfast with Lisbeth in a kitchen as clean as she could have made it herself. The window and door were open, and the morning air brought with it a mingled scent of southern wood, thyme, and sweetbriar from the patch of garden by the side of the cottage. Dinah did not sit down at first, but moved about, serving the others with the warm porridge and the toasted oat cake, which as he had got ready in the usual way, for as he had asked Seth, to tell her just what his mother gave them for breakfast. Lisbeth had been unusually silent since she came downstairs, apparently requiring some time to adjust her ideas to a state of things in which she came down like a lady, to find all the work done, and sat still to be waited on. Her new sensation seemed to exclude the remembrance of her grief. At last, after tasting the porridge, she broke silence. "Ye might ha' made the porridge worse," she said to Dinah. "I can ate it without its turnin' my stomach. It might ha' been a trifle thicker and no harm, and I lays puttin' a sprig o' mint in mysen, but how's ye t' know that? The lads arena like to get folks as LL make their porridge as in made it for 'em. It's well if they get anybody as LL make porridge at all. But ye might do, why a bit o' showin', for ye're a stirrin' body in a mornin', and ye of a light heel, and ye of clean th house well enough for a mash shift." "Makeshift, mother?" said Adam. "Hi, I think the house looks beautiful. I don't know how it could look better." "Thee dostna know? Nay, how's thee to know? Th men never know whether the floor's cleaned or cat licked. But thee'lt know when he gets thy parage burnt, as it's like enough to be when in guyin or makin' it. Thee'lt think thy mother wore good for some mat then." "Dinah," said Seth, "do come and sit down now, and have your breakfast. We're all served now." "Aye, come and sit ye down do," said Lisbeth, "an ate a morsel, ye'd need, arter bein' you o' your legs this hour and half arity. Come, then," she added, in a tone of complaining affection, as Dinah sat down by her side, "I'll be loath for ye to go, but ye canna stay much longer, I doubt. I could put up why ye ith house better nor why most folks." "I'll stay till tonight if you're willing," said Dinah. "Dee stay longer, only I'm going back to Snowfield on Saturday, and I must be with my aunt tomorrow. Eh, I'd never go back to that country. My old man come from that Stonyshire side, but he left it when he wore a young un, and I the right on to, for he said as there wore no wood there, and it 'ud ha' been a bad country for a carpenter." "Ah," said Adam, "I remember father telling me, when I was a little lad, that he made up his mind, if ever he moved it should be southard. But I'm not so sure about it. Bartle Massey says, and he knows the south as the northern men are a finer breed than the southern, harder headed and stronger bodied, and a deal taller. And then he says in some o' those counties it's as flat as the back o' your hand, and you can see nothing of a distance without climbing up the highest trees. I couldn't abide that. I like to go to work by a road that'll take me up a bit of a hill, and see the fields for miles round me, and a bridge, or a town, or a bit of a steeple here and there. It makes you feel the world's a big place, and there's other men working in it with their heads and hands besides yourself." "I like th hills best," said Seth, "when the clouds are over your head and you see the sun shining ever so far off, over the Loamford way, as I've often done o' late, on the stormy days. It seems to me, as if that was heaven, where there's always joy and sunshine, though this life's dark and cloudy." "Oh, I love the Stonyshire side," said Dinah. "I shouldn't like to set my face towards the countries, where they're rich in corn and cattle, and the ground so level and easy to tread, and to turn my back on the hills, where the poor people have to live such a hard life, and the men spend their days in the mines away from the sunlight. It's very blessed on a bleak cold day, when the sky is hanging dark over the hill, to feel the love of God in one's soul, and carry it to the lonely, bare, stone houses, where there's nothing else to give comfort." "Eh," said Lisbeth, "that's very well for ye to talk, as looks welly like the snowdrop flowers as ha' lived for days and days when in Jeetherdom, why nothing but a drop o' water and a peep o' daylight. But th hungry folks had better leave th hungry country. It makes less mouths for the scant cake." "But," she went on, looking at Adam, "donna thee talk o' goin' southard or northard, and leavin' thy feyther and mother i' the churchyard, and goin' to a country as they know nothin' on. I'll never rest i' my grave, if I donna see thee i' the churchyard of a Sunday." "Donna fear, mother," said Adam. If I hadn't made up my mind not to go, I should have been gone before now. He had finished his breakfast now, and rose as he was speaking. What art going to do? Asked Lisbeth. And about thy faither's coffin? No, mother, said Adam. We're going to take the wood to the village, and have it made there. Nay, my lad, nay, Lisbeth burst out in an eager, wailing tone. Thee wadna let nobody make thy faither's coffin but thysen? Who'd make it so well? And him as knowed what good work wore, and's got a son as is the head o' the village and all tread listen to, for cleverness. Very well, mother, if that's thy wish, I'll make the coffin at home. But I thought thee wouldstna like to hear the work going on. And why shouldn't I like tea? It's the right thing to be done. And what's liking got to do wit? It's choice o' mislikings is all in God I this world. One morsel's as good as another, when your mouth's out o' taste. The mun said about it now this mornin' first thing. I wanna ha' nobody to touch the coffin but thee. Adam's eyes met Seth's, which looked from Dinah to him rather wistfully. No, mother, he said, I'll not consent, but Seth shall have a hand in it too, if it's to be done at home. I'll go to the village this forenoon, because Mr. Burgell want to see me, and Seth shall stay at home, and begin the coffin. I can come back at noon, and then he can go. Nay, nay, persisted Lisbeth, beginning to cry, and set my heart on as he shall ma thy faither's coffin. Feet so stiff and masterful, feet never do as thy mother wants thee. Thee wast often angered why thy faither when he wore alive, thee must be the better to him now he's gone. He'd ha' thought nothing on't for Seth to ma's coffin. Say no more, Adam, say no more, said Seth, gently, though his voice told that he spoke with some effort. Mother's in the right. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.